There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com. This is The Grill. Get involved with the show. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye Messenger app.
We are not at our spiritual home of Barasti this afternoon. We are in our humble abode, our new offices, our new studios here at Media City. We are with you through until 6 o'clock this evening, keeping you abreast of all the live sport, all of the big talking points from the week that was as well. I'm delighted to say that helping me do that, two men that I like to call the A-team. To my left, it is Mark Archer. A very good afternoon to you, Archie.
Good to see you, Chris. It's only been a short while since Thursday night, but I hope you've had a good weekend to date, and it's good to talk about some very interesting sports today. A riveting first test match drawing to a conclusion over at Edgbaston. We'll bring you bang up to date. There's been wickets, there's been drama. We'll bring you bang up to date very shortly.
We certainly will. Mark Archer then, and you're right, Archie, I see more of you than I do my missus over the course of the past couple of weeks. Alongside Mark Archer, delighted to have this man back because I haven't seen him in a good few weeks. It is Carl Van Roosevelt. A very good afternoon to you, Carl.
Yeah, very good afternoon, Chris McCarty. Good afternoon, listeners. And as you say, an action-packed weekend of sport. If I'm sounding a little bit tired today, Chris McCarty, it's because I've been watching the WGC in Oakland, Ohio, and I must say, as you say, a packed leaderboard. And I tell you what, golf to me is in a very, very healthy state at the moment. So competitive.
Robbie Greenfield goes off on holidays and there is still a cheerleader for golf. That is what I like to see, Carl Van Roosevelt. We will talk that WGC Bridgestone Invitational because, as I said at the top of the show, a stacked leaderboard over there in Ohio. There is only one place to start, though, gentlemen. That is in the cricket. It is Edgbaston, day four of what has been a quite remarkable first test match. And if this has set the standard for what we've got to look forward to over the course of the next 6 weeks, we are going to be very, very spoiled. Mark Archer has got the latest. If you're an Indian cricket fan, you might just want to turn your volumes down.
Let me just paint the picture. At stumps on day three, India were 110 for five chasing that victory in the target of 194 to win the match. So they were 110 for five overnight. Virat Kohli in command like he's been for much of the series after that magnificent 149 in the first innings. But with the sixth ball of the day, Jimmy Anderson struck. He got Murali Kartik, caught Milan in the slips, bowled Anderson for 20, and then the key wicket came. Ben Stokes came into the tack. So often something happens when Ben Stokes is either bowling or batting. He got Virat Kohli, LBW, the key wicket for England, for 51. He followed that up three balls later by getting Mohammad Shami caught behind by Johnny Bairstow, by Ben Stokes bowling for naught. And India currently 152 for 8, requiring another 42 runs. Two wickets remaining for England to win the first test match, 42 runs for India. It's still game on, Chris, but I've got to say the pendulum has swung back to England's side of the draw here. It looks like they will need the two wickets to clinch victory, but it's Ishant Sharma on 9, Hardik Pandya. You've got to think it all relies on him now, the all-rounder, 23 not out. Can he lead India to victory? Let's wait and see, but India 152 for 8. They need 42 more runs to win the first test match. England need two wickets. It's going to be a dramatic last hour of this, well, last hour before lunch of this first session on day four.
Yeah, looking forward to what we've got coming up because, as you rightly point out, India need 194 for victory. I'm not sure if you've caught any of it, Carl. I was watching a little bit of it yesterday, obviously being abreast of it across the first 2 days, Wednesday and Thursday. It's been a fantastic test match, and again, it proves, it underlines that test cricket is alive and kicking.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think it's what test cricket need. I mean, I was watching the opening and I was hoping Joe Root would go on to score that 100. Of course, he got run out at 80 and I thought, my word, England, you know, would be in trouble. But to me, it's been a bowler's test match, the way they've come back, England. And, you know, you've got to question Stokesy, how important he is to this England team, because as Arch says, the minute he seems to be back in it, things seem to be happening. And as you say, 42 runs needed by the Indians. We know how tough they are to beat, and England still needing 2 wickets, so all very, very exciting.
You make a good point about Ben Stokes there. He is missing, I'm right in saying he misses
he
the
is
second
scheduled
test.
To miss the second test. He's had that long waited, very controversial moment where he's got to go to court to defend himself against some criminal charges.
A free, yeah.
Yeah, that happened, I think, almost this time, 12 months ago. It was August or September last year where he had that night out and it ended up in a pretty nasty situation. And now it's only just coming to court now. So let's wait and see. He is scheduled to go to court during the second test, which is supposed to be at Lords. But I think the England team, the England management, the ECB, were trying to find a way actually to delay the trial if it gets held over, or if he doesn't have to actually physically go to court. I don't know the full details. They're trying to see if there's any way that he can become available for that second test match, because what he does is an all-rounder. He gives England, because he's a batting, you know, bats and bowls, he gives them the option of playing an extra spinner, an extra seamer, or an extra batsman by being in the team. That gives him a lot of balance. Take him out of the side, and then you're left short of options. But something always happens. When he's bowling, he looks like he may go for some runs, but he looks like he might pick up a wicket. And when he bats, he scores quickly. He moves the game on. Whatever he's doing in the game, he takes it forward. And so that's what we like to see about Ben Stokes. But yeah, India 154 for 8. They need 40 more runs. England need 2 wickets. It should all happen in the next I guess it's all going to happen before lunch on day 4.
Yeah, we're keeping an eye on that one. Just want to mention two men in particular. Virat Kohli. We were sat here on Thursday evening show, Mark Archer, in India. We're in a bit of a hole. Virat Kohli then comes to the fore. He accelerates the scoring. I think he was on 87, a methodical 87. And then we left this office. We were still kicking around, having a chat about the week that was. We turned on the television screens and he had motored on all the way through to 120, 130. He would go on and make 149. And when we talk about in need of a big performance, we talk clutch moments, don't we? We talk Michael Jordan, LeBron James in the world of NBA, Tom Brady in the world of NFL. In cricket, Virat Kohli, is there anyone better, Carl, than Virat Kohli?
Absolutely world-class. And, you know, these big players, when they need it and when they need to produce, they do produce. But not taking anything away from how great he was, I just felt that England's fielding was a bit sloppy. I think he got dropped twice.
Dropped at 21 and I think 51, twice by the same player as well, David Malan. And he must be regretting that, because if you think about it, you take Virat Kohli out of this test match, England would have won it convincingly, but Virat Kohli is the difference between the two teams. Obviously the best player, the best batsman on the planet, I think, on current form, and he's the key wicket. But such a pivotal moment when India was struggling. He held them together because he had to fight really hard for this first 50, and then he accelerated the scoring and got India really close to that first innings total. India, of course, made 274, only 13 runs behind England on the first innings.
And he's got 51 in the second innings as well.
You know, I think Arch touched on what makes him so fantastic. He can hold the innings together, and then when he needs to kind of put his foot on the gas, he can put his foot on the gas. He's such a versatile player. And as you say, I think, you know, he was the one guy keeping India within this test match. And that's why I think today was such a vital wicket, Arch, because if they had not stopped him in the 50s and he'd kicked on, I think it would have been quite an easy victory for India. But obviously getting that pivotal wicket has really put England back in the driver's seat.
Hardik Pandya's the man, though. Hardik Pandya, the all-rounder, he is the man now that India, or certainly England or India, will be pinning their hopes on. England will be looking to get him out. If he goes, then you've got to say it, and you've got your finger up, a wicket's gone.
I've got my finger up, I've signalled a wicket, and I can tell you that Ishant Sharma has actually just been dismissed. LBW, Adil Rashid, the man, much controversial selection for this match. He hasn't had to do much so far, he hasn't really had to bowl, but he's just come on. He's got Ishant Sharma, LBW for 11. So England are one wicket away from a victory in the first test match. India still require 40 runs. What will Hardik Pandya do now? Does he have to have a go? Does he rely on his tail end number 11 to try and get closer, or he's got to throw caution to the wind?
I think he's got to do that now. I think he's got to do what Virat Kohli did the other day, and I know it's easier said than done. He's got to just go for it now, because I don't think Yadav, who's the final man in, is what's his average? You'll maybe find that out from me, Archie, what his average is in tests. But Hardik Pandya now just needs to release the shoulders, put the shoulders back, and just go for it.
Yeah, everything is dependent on him. And a player I want to touch on and maybe bring Arch in here is Arch. So much controversy, questions around Adil Rashid coming into this England team. Do you think he's done enough to be re-elected and basically quiet all his critics?
Look, he hasn't had to, because the game's only into the early stage of the fourth day, and this is when a leg spinner or any spinner should come into his own on days 4 and 5. Once the wicket's starting to break up, once it's starting to turn a lot more, we saw the likes of Ravi Ashwin bowl, got a wicket in the 6th over of the day on day 1 because he was turning it. He was brought into the attack. But Adil Rashid, I don't think you can judge him on this test match. He just hasn't had the opportunity. He's only bowled 2 overs in the Indian second innings. The ball's been swinging. So Jimmy Anderson's got it moving. Stuart Broad got the first 2 wickets yesterday. Sam Curran's looked dangerous, the left arm swing that when he's bowled. So Adil Rashid, he's bowled 2 overs. He's done what he had to do. He's got 1 for 6.
Yeah.
He got Ishant Sharma with the googly. It just gives you a wicket-taking option. It gives you a bit of variety. But let's be honest, he hasn't really been tested in this match. And so I think he'll move on to the next test match and they'll see what the conditions are like. And he's done nothing wrong.
He's got the wicket of Virat Kohli in that first innings as well. Stopped Virat in his tracks at 149. It was Adil Rashid with the ball there. So he's done exactly. I think what will come out of this, if England do go on to take victory and they're one wicket away from doing that in this opening test, then the Ed Smith, the selectors, Joe Root, the skipper, they will come out of it, smiles on their face. There won't be much written about Adil Rashid now. That story has now moved on. It will be England 1, India 0 at the start of this test series. Just a quick word as well on Sam Curran, because you're right to name check him. 20-year-old, plays his cricket for Surrey. What a day he enjoyed in that first in India's first innings. Took the first three opening batsmen, Vijay gone, Dhawan gone, Rahul gone, to Sam Curran. And let us not forget his knock, a very important one as it's since transpired. That's 63 from just 65 balls faced down that England order yesterday. That has proved match winning.
Yeah, it's a great knock by Sam Curran. Came under all sorts of pressure. England trying to give themselves some sort of lead. And in the end of the day, you know, his 63, when they look at the margin of difference now, it's 40 runs. That 63 is almost the difference of giving them a chance or a total to bowl at. He's a young man out of Surrey. His brother Tom Curran also plays for Surrey. I actually played against his dad. There's a few cricketers coming
through now. Giving away your age,
yeah,
right?
Kevin Curran was a very, very talented cricketer. Played for Zimbabwe, but also spent a lot of time playing county cricket for Northamptonshire. Final rounder, unfortunately, did pass away a number of years ago, and he's not around to see his sons performed so well for England. But Sam Curran, he's looked dangerous with the ball, left arm swing bowler. He's got it to move. He's bowled some very intelligent cricketer for a 20-year-old. That's a lot of players in the team are saying he's very mature. He thinks about his game. He's done a good job at playing the situation very well, which he did yesterday. He hung in there. And then when he had to attack, when they were down to 8 wickets, he hit a couple of big sixes off Ashwin to give them a chance of a total bowl out. So Sam Curran, 63 yesterday. He's had a great test match, picked up a couple of wickets as well. And he has been instrumental as anyone in the England team, which looks like this victory is going to take place.
If England do go on and win this, then you've got to say he's probably with a great shout of being named man of the match. Some key wickets, as well as adding that 63.
Tough to go past Virat Kohli, 149.
But if they lose.
Yeah. No, fair play. I think whether he's man of the match or not, he's played an instrumental role. He's played a big role in England's victory if they can get this last wicket. And showing his value for the team. I think he came into the series still having a point to prove that he was actually good enough to be in the England team. He will play an important part because England have talked about rotating their seam bowlers. They're not going to have Stuart Broad, Jimmy Anderson, Sam Curran probably play every test match of the five. It's in a six-week period. So he will have a big role to play. He's young, he's fit. He's going to have to bowl a lot of overs in this cricket. And that's where India haven't done well. They haven't really tested the bowlers and given them a chance to get to Adil Rashid. Adil Rashid hasn't had to bowl because the seamers have done their job. Ben Stokes as well comes in as the fourth seamer. And that's where the Indian top order, much maligned top order, haven't done their job in this test match. They've exposed Virat Kohli to the new ball early. He's dealt with it, but they haven't given them a platform. The top three for India has been a big letdown in this test series, in the first test to date.
Absolutely, I'm just looking at it as well. 154 for 9 then. So India, with one wicket in hand, looking to get that, 40 it is required. It could go all the way down to the wire. We will keep up to date with that one. Just a quick other thing as well worth mentioning. We talk about the beauty of Test cricket, Carl, and the fact that, you know, the traditionalists out there, the Robbie Greenfields of this world, absolutely love it. It is worth noting, though, that we're not at lunch on day four, and yet once again we will have a result. Test cricket is going that way now. We're seeing an awful lot, certainly in the last 8 months or so, an awful lot of test matches finishing, if not day three, then early parts of day four.
Yeah, which I think it's a good thing at the end of the day. Maybe I'm not the traditionalist that, is it Robbie Greenfield or Robbie Greenwood? I can't keep up with this guy's name at the moment, but as to what he is. But Chris, I think for the sport, there's no doubt about it, that Test match cricket has been in a bit of trouble in the sense that not quite getting the supporters there and the people to the ground. I think a result is very, very important. And I think, once again, a lot's got to do with how they set up the pitches. And I think, once again, they did a great job at Edgbaston, you know, where they're setting up the pitch in such a way that we can actually get a result. And I think it's very, very important.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It's all about balance between bat and ball. And this test match is given everyone that's bowled, if you put it in the right areas, you get the ball to swing, you're in with a good shout. Nothing worse than seeing one team rock up and score 600 for three. And the test is dead. It's because the pitch is too flat. So great job for the curator there at Edgbaston. It's been a great contest between bat and ball. But batsmen, when they get in, have gone on and can get runs. Definitely. But you've got to work for it. You've got to earn it. You've got to do the hard yards. And then it's given enough encouragement for the swing bowlers, for the seam bowlers, and even the spin bowlers. The likes of Ravi Ashwin turning it from day one. It's been had a bit in for everything. So it's been a very good cricket wicket. No teams, you know, scored over 300.
That is the voice of Mark Archer, Carl Van Roosevelt, alongside myself as well, Chris McCarty. You're listening to The Grill. We are live with you through until 6 o'clock. That is us talking all things cricket. We're keeping an eye on that big one, the opening test over at Birmingham, Edgbaston. It is England against India. It's going down to the wire. We'll keep an eye on that. There's an awful lot more going on, though, in the world of sport. We're talking UFC. We've got the golf to discuss, rugby. Football is back as well. We saw a result last night in the Championship, Reading against Derby. We will be speaking to, or hearing from, should I say, the Derby manager, Frank Lampard, as well. We'll be hearing his thoughts between now and 6 o'clock. If you've got a thought, get it on in 4001. Join the conversation with us this afternoon. As I say, we're live with you till 6 o'clock. Stay tuned.
This is The Grill, bringing you the biggest sports stories right now on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome back to the show. Just gone 20 past three on your Saturday afternoon. A big thanks, as always, for your company. We are with you through until 6 o'clock. Myself, Chris McCarty, Carl Van Roosevelt and Mark Archer. Football is back. Competitive English action, Scottish as well. We will give you team news ahead of some of the big matches at 6 o'clock. There's also an early kickoff in League One. How the mighty have fallen. Sunderland taking on Charlton Athletic. Not so long ago, those two teams were Premier League sides, of course, and that one getting underway at 3:30, so we'll keep an eye on that one. Delighted, boys, that the football is back. I can see the excitement on both of your
faces.
Did
you watch it last night, the managerial debut of Frank Lampard?
I did not watch it from start to finish. It was on in the background. I was keeping an eye on it, and it was a victory as well, a decent victory. They weren't great in the opening half from what I saw, Derby, but it was a last minute winner and a win for Frank Lampard, and we will be hearing from him between now and 6, as I said.
Come from behind victory as well. They were 1-0 down, and they scored a last minute winner, I think a header basically in the second minute of extra time or injury time to win that match. So
absolutely, Tom Lawrence it was with a win, and interested to see, and you were asking me, Carl, before we came on air, the fact that Steven Gerrard as well, another former England midfielder, making his way in management, took over at Rangers Football Club up in Scotland. He will make his debut tomorrow, his first Scottish Premiership match, and what a match it should be up in Aberdeen against the Dons at Pittodrie. And, you know, Lampard and Gerrard, a lot of intrigue surrounding both of those players. Fantastic players as they were. Can they transfer that from the football pitch into the dugout?
Yeah, I think the difficult thing for them is, as we spoke off air, they'll bring a lot of energy to the club, no doubt about it. They're big names. I think naturally any people in the team would want to play for Stevie G. But the big question is, especially with Stevie G and Frank, how experienced are they once that kind of energy starts wearing off, and you know, you have to become a tactician? And I think that's obviously what would always be questioned, because you always find that even we see what happened to Swansea, you know, towards the end of the season. They bring in these ex-players or whatever, the energy is absolutely fantastic for the first season or whatever the case. And then all of a sudden, you actually have to be going, you know, to be a manager. You have to be a tactician. And it will be very, very interesting to see how they go along. But I think, you know, both of them, it's fantastic additions to both these clubs. And, you know, I think for Lampard, of course, he's in a much tougher league. You know, not taking anything away from your Scots, Chris McCarty, but I think he's in a much, much tougher league. And if, you know, if he can, I would say, get Derby into top six or even into a playoff position, I think it would be a fantastic result for him.
Yeah, I'm with you on that front. No doubt about it. The Championship, it is unforgiving. It is arguably the most competitive football league anywhere in the world. You look at it, you could probably pick 15 teams who have a genuine chance, or will feel they've got a genuine chance of reaching the promised land of the Premier League next season. In Scotland, it's different pressure for Steven Gerrard, because he's got to beat one team and one team only. That is Celtic, his former Liverpool boss in the shape of Brendan Rodgers. That being said, the expectation that Steven Gerrard has up there in Scotland, the Rangers fans, so demanding. They demand a certain brand of football first and foremost, but of course it's about getting victories, and it's about getting victories over Celtic. So a lot of intrigue surrounding both of those, and I do take your point. I think the biggest test for Lampard and for Gerrard will be when, and invariably, there will be periods throughout the season when results are not going their way. How will they react to that? And I think that's one of the most intriguing aspects, no doubt about that. But as Archie, you rightly said, it was a victory for Frank Lampard last night. 2-1 victory over Reading in that opening match for Derby. We'll hear from him in a little later on this evening. Other big talking points today, boys, rugby. And I know you're Lions. Are you a Lions man, Carl?
No, I'm a Sharks man, but of course this morning I was supporting the Lions because they made the final of Super Rugby. But I think, you know, everybody was speaking about it in the week, and a lot of people were saying, why did they even get on the plane and go to New Zealand? Because in all honesty, it's a fortress, the Crusaders ground. The Crusaders is such a polished outfit. And, you know, if you look at the stats, the Lions were in the Crusaders territory for 70% of the time. They had, I think it was 56 or 57% of the position. And at the end of the day, the Crusaders just too good. And, you know, I think the Lions got to ask themselves a couple of questions. To me, they got people in crucial positions that just not quite up to the standard of what it needs to be. And I don't know, a lot of people say I'm negative about Super Rugby, but I don't know if Mark Archer agrees with me, but I think they need to look at the whole format of Super Rugby at the moment. To me, it's got very watered down. Myself, a fanatical rugby supporter, I can't wait for the top 14 to start again in the Premiership, because to me, I think those are much better balanced competitions. And I kind of find, if you look at Super Rugby at the moment, the New Zealanders have got the best teams. However, only one of them can make it into the final. So I think you might have seen a better final this morning had the Crusaders taken on the Hurricanes or one of the other New Zealand teams. But anyway, well done to the Crusaders. 37-18 this morning, they beat the Lions. Absolutely clinical from the Crusaders. And I think, man for man, they were a better team than the Lions. I think with the exception of Malcolm Marx, I think he's an outstanding player. But I still think that we most probably would have seen a better final had it been in Johannesburg.
Yeah, fair that. Mark Archer, I know you watched it as well. Your boys, I say your boys, you are. You were telling me last week, a Crusaders fan, a ninth Super Rugby title. They were dominant, 37 points to 18. Does change need to come in, though, for the Super Rugby to last?
Let's just look at the game first. Yeah, Crusaders are back-to-back Super Rugby champions. Their ninth title, you could call them a dynasty now. They've produced the great players throughout their franchise history, the likes of the Dan Carters and the Richie McCaws have come through there, and they've got a power-packed forward pack. Many of the All Black forwards will come from that team. And then they bring the youngsters through, the likes of Richie Mwanga, who's been probably the form 10 in world rugby, in Super Rugby. Absolutely. Anyway. Has been a dominate, come from nowhere really, 23-year-old, and he's knocking, as we said the other day, on Beauden Barrett's door. We're lucky enough to talk to Brad Moore, the assistant coach, on Thursday night. Very downplayed, very sort of stoic, and very sort of, thought this was going to be a tough match. And look, the Lions, for all the difficulties they had to go through and travel and deal with the time difference, they put in a pretty good performance. I mean, 69% territory, 55% possession, yet the Crusaders were just extremely clinical. 4 tries to 2, Seta Tuimavalu, David Havili, Mitchell Drummond, and Scott Barrett. But Mwanga, he kicked all 4 conversions, the first 2 or 3 from the sideline, and then he nailed 3 penalties and a running display as well. You know, so he brought a bit of everything to his performance. Man of the match for the second week in a row, man of the match in the semi-final, man of the match in the final. And look, the Lions were manful. They played for 80 minutes. At times they were close, but they were a bit one-dimensional. They
Absolutely.
Didn't really have a plan B. Yeah. They keep going for line-out and rolling mauls, and the Crusaders thought, we know what you'd be throwing at us, and we're going to try and deal with that. Just when you think they might have a bit of plan B, something up their sleeve for a final, they sort of resorted to type. But Kyle Brink and Malcolm Marx with tries. Elkin Yankees, indifferent game, kicked a couple of penalties in conversion, but pressure came on him a couple of times, and he went missing. He made big mistakes at key times, and that gave either the Crusaders a sniff of a chance, and they capitalised. Every time that he gave them a sniff, they came back and scored a couple of tries. But your Crusaders, you can't take anything away from them. I think it's their 15th consecutive victory this season. They've lost 3 games in 2 years, and that franchise keeps on rolling.
Indifferent game. I think he's been absolutely kind to this guy. I mean, to me, the crucial part of that game was 15 minutes or 10 minutes before half time, and all of a sudden the Lions on attack, 69% of position. Giant Chiefs goes to sit in the pocket. He kicks it to the Crusaders. They run back in. They score a try. What does he do? He kicks it to the Crusaders again. They run back and score a try. And to me, that was the end of the final. And honestly, I think from a Lions management perspective, they've got to question what he's actually bringing to the table, because I'm not saying that just him alone cost the Lions the game today. But at the end of the day, the tactics that they displayed to me was absolutely, absolutely weak.
Are you sure you're not a Lions fan? You sound like a passionate Lions fan. I like that.
I would have loved to have been sitting on a couch next to Carl this morning.
It was a pleasure in my household.
The referee would have been in for some abuse. The Lions players would have been in for some abuse. Elton Yankees would have been in for some
abuse. For a lot of abuse.
It would have been a dramatic morning with CVR and his sofa this morning.
I think there would have been some colourful language as well. Let us now get some highlights then of that Super Rugby final. What it comes down to, it's yet another success. Defending champions Crusaders, too good for the Lions, 37 points to 18.
Out of the way for Tamani Valo! Arm is out, try coming. Away for Todd, hands are back. Yaga play! Mitchell Drummond. Now they do, short pass to Barrett. Stick Barrett.
Fantastic scenes down there in Christchurch, and that little chant that you heard there, Scotty Robertson, the coach of the Crusaders, famed for Mark Archer. When his team wins, he celebrates by breakdancing.
He steps out a few moves back from the 90s, and he's come through. He's a full-time, he was a Crusader player. He went on to coach the New Zealand under 20s. He then coached Canterbury in the MPC, and every time they won a title, he would the players would get around him and he'd do a bit of breakdancing. He's a very quirky character. But he's done a great job bringing together, you know, it's always tough. Talk about how talented the Crusaders are. It's a bit like when you've got Golden State Warriors and Steve Kerr. You still need to find a way of keeping everyone happy, making sure everyone gets their touches, making sure that you're still fully involved in the squad. You know, look at the credit for the Crusaders. Two All Black World Cup winners can't make the match day 23. Correct. So you've got the likes of Wyatt Crockett, the most ever capped player in Super Rugby, can't get in the 23. And you've also got Israel Dagg, two times Rugby World Cup winner, can't get in the 23. So if you're a coach of a team, you've got to find a way of making that work, because you're going to have some players, but they all buy into what the franchise is trying to do. It's a wonderful example there of everyone coming together for one goal. And the other thing we talked about the other night was Ronan O'Gara. Irish, Munster and Irish legend at fly half. He then was coaching in Paris for Racing Metro, and the Crusaders offered him a job to come in as an assistant coach. Now, he probably cut his pay in half, I would have thought, if not even more than that, by a third, to go to Super Rugby. But he wanted to learn. He wanted to go into a culture to find out what makes them so successful. And I'm sure he will maybe do one more year and go back and maybe look for an Irish-type coaching role, maybe when Joe Smith moves on, who might be the next All Blacks coach at some stage. He will go back and play a big part in his coaching career with what he's learnt in that 12 months, or maybe another season. He's done a great job in Christchurch, Ronan O'Gara. Maybe he'll take that back into Northern Hemisphere rugby.
Well done to the Crusaders. There is breaking news in the world of cricket. We will hold you in suspense. We've got a result from Edgbaston. We'll give you it when we come back. Stay tuned.
The Grill has all the sport you need right now on Dubai Eye 103.8.
We certainly do. Welcome back to the show. Baraste, our usual home. We're not there this afternoon. We are in our new studios here at Media City. If you are looking, though, for a venue to watch all of your sport, it does go without saying that Baraste is the perfect venue. 20-plus screens, including that big monster big screen as well. I'm sure they will be showing the football a little later. That is because the Championship, League One, League Two over in England, the Scottish Premiership, it's all back. All kicks off 6 p.m. this evening. We'll keep an eye on the early kickoff in League One as well between Sunderland and Charlton Athletic. Goals as they go in for any Sunderland or Charlton fans out there, and I'm sure there will be some of you. 4001, let me know if there's an Addicts fan or a Black Cats fan out there on the text lines. Before that, though, we have a result from the cricket. I said a little earlier, Indian fans might just want to turn their volumes down. You definitely want to turn your volumes down now.
Yeah, the final wicket has fallen at Edgbaston. Hardik Pandya has been caught by Alistair Cook, bowled by Ben Stokes, for 31. And that means that England have won the first test match by 31 runs. India are dismissed in their second innings for 162. They only need 194 for victory, but they have fallen 31 runs short. Leading the way for England with the ball today, Ben Stokes has taken 4 for 40, including 3 wickets today. And the key wicket, of course, was Virat Kohli. LBW Stokes for 51. So England have won the first test match at Edgbaston. It's a 5-test match series. Second test match will get underway later next week in London at Lord's, the home of cricket, of course. But England, and what a riveting test match it was. Had all the ups and downs, the ebbs and flows. Both teams were dominant during time. So England have won their 1,000th test match.
Indian fans, let us know. 4001, give us your reaction. If you have been sat on your, at your television, perhaps this morning or over the course of the past 3 days as well, give us your reaction to that success. What a test match, though, and that has just whetted the appetite ahead of the best of five series. Cannot wait for that second test to come around, as Archie says, next week down at Lord's. Now, just sticking with the cricket, your boys have been in action as well, Carl. South Africa, Sri Lanka, best of five ODI series. They're 2-0 up, are the Proteas. They play tomorrow again over there in Sri Lanka, but having come off the back of a rather dispiriting test defeat, I think you lost 2-0 that series, starting to look good again, moving on from the AB de Villiers era, and Quinton de Kock, Faf du Plessis, good side.
Yeah, I think, you know, the result is obviously good for South Africa, but I still think that South Africa is still struggling for a lot of consistency. And, you know, at the end of the day, to me, not taking anything away from Sri Lanka, I still think you need to test yourself against the big boys, you know, and that's kind of when, to me, South Africa always struggling with consistency. But we'll take the two victories and continue. And as you say, yeah, I think, you know, I think the good thing for this team is they have proved there is life after AB de Villiers. He's big shoes to fill, but I think they're going along nicely, Chris.
Two young boys that I want to talk about, exciting talents in the world of cricket, Kagiso Rabada and Lungi Ndidi. Lungi Ndidi, right? That's his name.
That's correct.
Aye, phew. I was panicking myself.
I was looking towards Carl for a correct pronunciation.
Not going to get it from me.
Lungi Ndidi.
Sounds pretty right to me.
I think it's my pronunciation, my Scottish pronunciation. I butcher names time and time again on this show. But two young talents, two proper talents who South Africa can really build a bowling attack. And when you throw in Vernon Philander into the mix as well, my goodness, that can worry the very best.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you mentioned these two youngsters. And to me, Rabada is somebody that we've known for a long, long time what he can do, Chris. And I think the big thing with fast bowlers nowadays, especially a guy like Rabada, is to keep him fit. Yeah. To keep him accurate, and, you know, to make sure that these guys don't get any long-term injuries. Because to your point, I think that in the South African cricket team at the moment, the Proteas is a bit of a change of arm. You know, the likes of AB de Villiers, the Dale Steyns of this world, these guys have kind of moved on. And, you know, you got this youngster, 23 years old now, Kagiso Rabada. And, you know, he needs to carry the mantle, and he's proved he can do it. I just think it's essential now that the Proteas management get behind these guys. I think man management at this stage of their careers is very, very important. And then, as you say, make sure they stay injury-free and, you know, they can lead the Proteas, for example, for the next couple of years.
Interested to read comments from Dale Steyn, another Proteas legend, of course, a man that took so many wickets and, again, at his very best, you'd be hard-pushed to find a better quick during his generation. He's come out, Archie, and we were talking about this off-air in the week, coming out essentially to not defend the ball tampering scandal from Australia, but saying that it was a cry from help, that simply put, cricket these days is so in favour of the batsman. This was an interview that he gave with Reuters. He says there's so much in favour of batsmen these days. Fields are small, two new balls, power plays, bats have got bigger than they used to be. The list can go on. The bowl, you bowl a no ball and it's a free hit, but I have never seen a rule change that favours the bowler. Interesting comments that from Dale Steyn. Is the game of cricket too in favour of batsmen?
Well, if we look at the test match just concluded, in the last 10 minutes at Edgbaston, I think when they get the pitches right, when they get the balance between bat and ball correct, we see fascinating cricket. And they talk about the death of 5-day test cricket. It's not interesting, it's boring, no one's got the time to watch it. But when you get the balance right between the pitch and giving the bowlers an equal opportunity to take wickets when they bowl well, then you see a different game. And look, Dale Steyn's got a point. I think all the rule changes, particularly in limited overs cricket, has been in favour of the batsmen. We've seen T20 cricket, so players are now being extremely innovative. And I think batting in limited overs cricket has advanced a lot quicker than bowling has. Mm. And just that's the nature of the game. So I think he's got some validity to his points there. But, you know, it's still no excuse for tampering with the ball. If he's almost going along the line saying, well, we need to tamper with the ball because it gives the bowlers the chance. And, you know, that's it's been debated whether they should make it legal. But that you can, everyone can actually do what you want to the ball and that the game on. But again, it's a bit like the debate we've had in cycling before. You just, if you open it up, everyone can go doping, then yeah, it just makes a bit of a mockery of the game. So, look, valid points, I think, by Dale Steyn. And, you know, maybe there are some rule changes that the ICC can look at to give bowlers a bit more chance, particularly on really flat wickets. But as we've seen in Edgbaston today, we get the balance right, you see fascinating cricket, particularly in five-day test matches.
Yeah, Tendulkar, Sachin Tendulkar, one of those that says that he would like to see the two new balls rule and ODIs abolished. Dale Steyn has jumped on board that as well to say, yeah, exactly, let us, give us a chance to make some headlines as opposed to the batsmen. Fair points. I mean, Archie there saying that Dale's, he's kind of with them, but in order to keep the game, I guess, and that's the, one of the big problems with cricket, is trying to keep it fast, frenetic, action-packed so that it does attract a new fandom. Perhaps that is the way to go, and unfortunately bowlers will just have to make do with it.
I think Dale Steyn has used totally the wrong example of of trying to bring over his point. I mean, I don't know, to me it kind of sounds like he's encouraging ball tampering, but to his point, and I think he's used it in total wrong context, Chris McCarthy, I think that we've seen now, especially with this England-India test match, that if the pitches are prepared in a certain way, it definitely does give the bowler more of a chance. And I think, you know, it also depends in what context of the game you're looking, because if you're looking at T20, I always think that the pitch should favour the batsman because it's short, it's exciting, people want to see as many sixes. It's not as tactical, Mishra, as what five-day test matches. Coming to five-day test matches, I reckon it is important to kind of set the pitch, like, let's say, Edgbaston. I think it was a good example of how the pitch, where the bowler does have more opportunity. But I think the way cricket has been going, we've been going for kind of a more baseball type of look and feel, if you want to call it as such, because people just want batsmen hitting the balls out of the park and entertaining the crowds. So I think he's got a very, very valid point, but I think it's kind of horses for courses. So it depends what format you're speaking about, and I think that's how they should adjust the pitches.
From the point that you boys have both raised there, I guess it comes down to responsibility of the curators across the world. You're right to point out that the curator for Edgbaston has created, and again, the players have got to go out there and execute, of course they do, but have created a level playing field. Perhaps, certainly in recent months, going to the subcontinent, perhaps the pitches have not been prepared as a true and fair test. They have hugely favoured the home team. I mean, moving forward on that front, ICC, do they need to look into that and maybe perhaps have pitches that, I know you were talking about it the other week, Archie, about abolishing, doing away with the coin toss, essentially letting the tourists decide, because that will then kind of give, I guess, an equilibrium. Yes, you're the home side, but we get to choose whether we bat or bowl first.
Yeah, I mean, that's one option. They've done it in county cricket for a number of seasons now, so it stopped counties preparing pitches that suited their particular style of play, and it could happen in the subcontinent. There's been a lot of people say, yeah, we're in favour of it. There's been quite a few players come out and say, well, we're not in favour of it. So I guess you've got to look at the options. Maybe they need to test it. Maybe they need to try it out and give it a go and see if it changes the results or changes the style of play and bring something back to Test cricket. You know, Test cricket is struggling to survive. Not many people have 5 days anymore to watch Test matches, A, in person, or B, in television. And once people aren't showing up to matches or consuming it on television, then it's going to be a dying business very quickly, and ultimately sport's all about business. So let's wait and see. I don't personally see any problem with trialling it out. It's been trialled in domestic cricket. It seems to have worked. So why not give it a go for some type of trial period in Test cricket? If it doesn't work, then revert back to norm. Start tossing the coin again. But why not give it a go?
Sachin Tendulkar, one of his radical ideas as well, and he said this in an interview, I think the back end of last year, he was talking about having half and half, having the pitch curated by one curator for the away team, the other half of the pitch is curated by the home team, therefore that when you switch around, you've got essentially two pitches on the wicket, that there's two curators doctoring it for each team.
It doesn't work though, because the reason pitches differ so much around the world is you have different types of soil. And in the subcontinent or here in the UAE, you have soil with a much lesser clay component. And what that means is when you've got a lesser clay component, the pitches just naturally deteriorate quicker. When you go to the hard pitches of South Africa or Australia, Perth, for example, you have a higher clay content which binds the pitch together. It's harder and faster. That's the characteristic of the soil in the country. So unless you want to start importing soils from other countries, which they have done here at the ICC Academy, that's what we did there 10 years ago to create different playing circumstances, you're just then starting to cause problems. You can't create two different pitches at different ends of a pitch. It'll be a farce.
So Pakistan fly into South Africa and they bring their soil with them to get the pitch prepared. But Chris, I think it's been a concern for a long, long time that to me the home team is always at an advantage. It doesn't matter where you go play. The home team in cricket has always got the advantage because, to Archie's point, that soil is in the country and they prepare the pitch to suit them.
Of course that there is, and I guess it's the acid test. That is part of the beauty of cricket. You've got to go out of your comfort comfort zone, out of your current environments, England for example, and find spinners and find different ways to win cricket matches. 4001, let us know your thoughts on that one as well. Conscious of time here, just gone 4:15. We are with you through until 6 o'clock. So much in the world of sport to discuss. Daniel Ricciardo being one of them, the Red Bull driver dropping a bombshell in the past 24 hours. He's not interested in sticking around. We'll tell you more on that, and we'll have an update as well on that WGC Bridgestone Invitational from Ohio. We'll have all of that and much more to come between now and 6 o'clock. Stay tuned.
This is The Grill, bringing you the biggest sports stories right now on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome back to the show. If you are just joining us, the big news this afternoon, England have emerged victorious in that opening test against India. 31-run victory. It was thrilling to the last. Ben Stokes, the hero of the day. 3 wickets, including the prized possession of Virat Kohli's wicket as well. England then take that 1-0 lead in the best of 5 series. We will hopefully hear from one of the key protagonists or a few of the key protagonists between now and 6 o'clock. Before that, though, let's give you a quick score update across all the differing live sports at the moment. League One is officially off and running. That is English football, of course. Sunderland taking on Charlton, two massive football clubs now in the third tier of English football. 18 minutes on the clock in this one at the Stadium of Light. Sunderland, 22,000 season ticket sales as well. Quite remarkable for a club that have fallen on tough times, back-to-back relegations, of course, and I can tell you it's not exactly a happy start either. Sunderland 0, Charlton Athletic 1. It is a penalty from Lyle Taylor. Interesting to see as well. Charlton Athletic boss, the former Leeds midfielder Lee Bowyer. So Charlton up and running, 18 minutes on the clock there. Sunderland 0, Charlton 1. Let us talk golf if we can, gentlemen, because there is the small matter of a WGC event. It is the Bridgestone Invitational over in Ohio, and as I said at the start of the show, Carvan Roosevelt, the leaderboard is stacked. Some big, big names at the top of that leaderboard.
Yeah, Chris McCarty, and as we were speaking off air, it's funny how Ian Poulter always comes to the party with just about a month and a half to go to the Ryder Cup. But what I can tell you is he had an opening 62, best career round for Ian Poulter. He followed that up with a 67. That puts him on 11 under par. And then also yesterday, a fantastic round by the Liverpoolian Tommy Fleetwood. He's right up there. He shot a 63 yesterday. So Ian Poulter, Tommy Fleetwood, and of course, Justin Thomas at 11 under par. They are leading in Ohio at the moment. They're followed there by Kyle Stanley and Jason Day at 9 under. Then we've got Siwoo Kim and Rory McIlroy. Good to see him playing well once again on 8 under par. So all very, very tightly matched. Another big name there, John Ram on 6 under par, and then of course the big Aussie Mark Leishman at 6 under par. Tiger Woods, of course, we all know what that man brings to golf. Thousands and thousands of people following him around the course there yesterday. He's of course won, I think it's about 6 or 7 times at the WGC Bridgestone Country Club. He's at 6 under par, and of course he's followed there by Webb Simpson. So very, very tight at the top of the leaderboard. Not such a great opening 2 rounds for world number one Dustin Johnson. Of course he won the RBC Canadian Open the week before. He's been struggling a little bit in Ohio.
He certainly has. Rafa Cabrera-Bello as well. We were talking to his manager, of course, Richard Raymond, on Thursday evening. For those of you tuning in, he's actually not bad either. 3 under par yesterday, 67. He is at 5 under par. So it is a stat leaderboard. Of course, some of the leading lights, all of the leading lights in the world of golf are over there at that particular event. Great to see Tommy Fleetwood playing so well. And as you rightly point out, and you're right to do so, it is Ryder Cup time. The conversation is ramping up ahead of the big event over in Paris, and Ian Poulter coming to the fore, just reminding Thomas Bjorn, I'm around here, I have got capabilities, and I think if he can see this through, if he can go on and win this, he almost certainly will book his place, I would imagine, in that European Ryder Cup team, will he not, Archie?
Yeah, all 3 players tied for the lead are expected to play a major role in the Ryder Cup. Of course, Ian Poulter and Tommy Fleetwood for the European team. Almost locks, I would have thought, to be in the team either via selection or automatically. And Justin Thomas, of course, will be part of the US Ryder Cup team. So big names starting to find their form. Of course, the 4th major of the year, the PGA Championship, is not that far away, a couple of weeks away. And then all these players, all the Europeans and all the Americans will set their sights on Paris in France there for the for the Ryder Cup. It takes place at the, I think it's the final week of September. So a lot of the players focusing their games, trying to get an automatic spot, and obviously trying to catch the captain's eye to make sure that they're a pick if they can't quite get in those top eight spots there. So, yeah, a lot of all top 64 players in the world playing in Akron, Ohio in the WGC. It may get underway around maybe in the next hour or so we'll keep an eye on the scoreboard, but the leaders won't go off till much later this evening.
Rory McIlroy is one of those chasing down that three-way tie at the top of the leaderboard. Ian Poulter, Tommy Fleetwood and Justin Thomas. Rory McIlroy down at 8 under par. That was after a 67, 3 under par 67 in his round 2. That followed a 65 in round 1 and after he spoke yesterday. And as you can hear now, very happy with his day's work.
Yeah, I think that was a bit of a wry smile, if anything. I felt I was getting frustrated on the back nine. I was putting it in positions where, you know, I should have been giving myself birdie chances and I was having to hold 5 and 6 footers for pars. So I think my patience was rewarded. I started to hit some better wedge shots coming in, a good wedge shot on 16, another good one on 18. And it added up to 3 under somehow. So, you know, still right there going into the weekend.
What would you like to clean up heading into Saturday?
Wedge play. And not that I hit bad wedge, I was, my distances were a little bit off. You know, I flew the green by about 8 yards on the 10th hole, just trying to take something off a wedge. So I just need to, if I can match up the speed of my arms with my body and just get a little bit more consistent with that. So I might go hit a few wedge shots on the range this evening and try to figure it out.
How about the putter? I know you've worked really hard with that part of your game. The greens seem to be getting a little faster. How would you rate your putting through the first two rounds?
Yeah, I think I've putted well. You know, I gained nearly a shot on the field or 3/4 of a shot on the field yesterday. And I'd say with how I putted today, I probably, you know, it was similar. I missed a couple of chances, but, you know, I held out well and held all the putts that I needed to. So I'm happy with that over the last couple of days.
Rory McIlroy there speaking after his second round. He will start moving Saturday, round 3 shots behind the leaders. And you were remarking, Carl Van Roosevelt, when you came in this afternoon, just before we jumped on air, that you have been staying up late. You've been watching the WGC Bridgestone Invitational. And I guess you were still coming off the back of watching the Lions lose to the Crusaders. You weren't happy with that. You came in and the first thing that you said was, "Nice to see you, my man. Nice to see you, Carl. Rory McIlroy needs to change his caddy. You're not happy with the fact that he's got his old buddy, isn't it, Harry Diamond, on his bag. And someone who, there have been question marks over whether he is the right, I guess, the right man on that bag and the right, I guess, the right personality is the word I'm looking for, to be that person moving forward."
You know, Chris, if you look at it at the moment, I'd say that the top 20 golfers in the world, it's so competitive with these guys. And I think any single advantage that you can get over the next guy, you've got to take it. And in all honesty, I don't think Harry's got any clue of what's happening on a golf course.
See how it is, Carl.
And not being nasty towards him. But Rory, that to me is such a great talent. And to me, every time he's getting so close and there's a couple of things not clicking, I do believe he should go look for an experienced caddy that can help him read the lines. We know that putting is probably the worst part of his game, you know, that he's been struggling with, because he is such a great talent. But I just feel that if he could have somebody a little bit more experience on the bags. I mean, we know what Steve Williams did over the years for the likes of Tiger. We know what Michael Grill is doing for Jordan Spieth. I kind of feel he needs somebody like that on the bag that can kind of calm him down at times, help him read the putting lines. You know, he spoke yesterday about his wedges. I mean, there was one wedge shot he hit and he hit it totally over the green. And I kind of feel that if you've got somebody a little bit more experience on the bag, can give you the exact distances, give you the evaluation of the greens and help him read the putts, to me it would be a big help for Rory at the moment. So if I was in Rory's position at this moment in time, I think I'd be looking for a new caddy.
This isn't the first time that Rory McIlroy's caddy has come under the microscope, Mark Archer. JP Fitzgerald, who is a resident here in Dubai, often see him around town. He himself came in for an awful lot of criticism at the time, saying that Rory needs to change his caddy. Is Harry Diamond an easy target? Or is Carl raising some interesting points there? The fact that perhaps a man far more experienced than Harry, and he is a childhood friend of Rory McIlroy's. I believe he's a fine golfer himself, but could that be something that Rory needs to look into if he's to get back? And what is he, a 4-time major winner? He seems content in life, does Rory. When you listen to him now, he seemed happy with his lot. We all thought that Rory McIlroy would go on and win 6, 7, 8, who knows, maybe even get into double figures. Is that something he needs to look at?
I think he's still got time to win plenty of majors, but he needs to find something in his game or something in his golfing repertoire to find a little bit of a breakthrough. If you look back at over the last couple of decades of all the top golfers, They all have leading caddies, and we can name the caddies. You know, the likes of Tiger Woods with Steve Williams. It was Fluff before that,
yeah.
And then he won a lot with those guys. Then he went through a period of changing caddies and didn't have much success. Tiger Woods, albeit he had the injury problems. Look at Phil Mickelson; he had bones on the back, and that ended only recently. I think bones on his back for 20 years, and he won many majors there. So, I think if you look at the big name players.
Ernie Els had Ricky Roberts back in the days when he was winning all those majors. Steve Williams then changed over to Adam Scott. Adam Scott becomes a major winner. And we know what happened to Adam Scott, of course, when he lost that British Open to Ernie Els in 2012. He then comes back to win the Masters with Steve Williams on his bag. And to me, they can just kind of bring that whole ease feel to you. They know the courses so well. And I don't know, to me, it's a great weapon to have in your artillery.
Yeah, no, I agree. And maybe it's something Rory's got to look at, but then it becomes pretty hard to fire your buddy, because then he's not your buddy anymore, is he?
No. Nope.
You've got to make – and that's the issue they often say. You know, it's always difficult working for your friend, if your friend's your boss, because when you need to really put under the pump and the boss has got to make some tough decisions, it's got to be tough to fire a friend. And so – It's going to be a difficult decision. And let's be honest, Harry Diamond's probably not going to be Rory's caddy for the rest of his career. So at some stage, he's going to have to go through a, look, mate, can we just have a chat about this situation here? I think it's not quite working out. We might just have to change something up. But someone has to maybe have a strong word in Rory's ear. I'm not sure who's giving him the guidance. Who's, you know, from a coaching perspective, or I know his father's very influential. Who's telling Rory what he should be and shouldn't doing? I know he's a man unto himself. But maybe you need someone else, someone with, you know, not so much emotional attachment to the decision.
I do sincerely hope that Harry Diamond is not listening to this show this afternoon.
I sure hope he is and he retires. or hands in his resignation.
Oh, that's a little harsh. Sorry, Harry, that's Carl Van Roosevelt. I can give you his phone number if you want to take it up with Carl. When we come back, it is just tick through to 4 o'clock. You are listening to The Grill. We are discussing all things sport. Of course we are. It is The Grill, where we keep you up to date, bang up to date with all that is going on in the world of sport. We will continue to do so for the next 2 hours. We'll put you in the picture of what is going on from a live perspective, and we're also looking back on some of the big stories that have been making the headlines in the past week. One of those is Conor McGregor. He is back in the headlines for all the right reasons. We'll discuss that and much more when we come back. Stay tuned.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.